Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Field Pass. This is Dan, and I have John joining me on the heels of what was one of the craziest college football games I can remember. And that's saying a lot given what Illinois did last year with all the overtimes, a 9-overtime game a few years back. But the way that game unfolded against Purdue was one of the craziest halves of football, I'll say, that I've ever seen.
I think it's because we finally have expectations back in our lives for Illini football that would have been the most heartbreaking loss ever. Just like that was, especially the Ryan Walters component to it. Like if we had found a way to gack that, I told you when we were walking back, like we're going to the game this weekend and there's no shot I would have been able to go back to back back in the stadium after witnessing and living and experiencing that. There's way too much PTSD in that scenario. So, I mean, I'm glad that we came out with that, but whoo boy, there are a lot of questions that need to be answered in the coming months.
Yeah, I mean, there's so much to digest from that Purdue game. And like you said, the fact that it was Ryan Walters and the Purdue team that we seemingly can never beat.
And like we were owning them. We were going to, like, we were covering the spread in the first half and they were looking like they were going to quit and everything was going our way. And they throw a double move on us and score, and then a sack, strip, fumble, and a touchdown. And then all of a sudden we started playing, you know, not to lose instead of playing to win. And it was just all bad.
The funny thing is, it's not like we turned into a total shell on offense in the second half.
No,
they just converted every drive into a touchdown. It seemed like they would just march and it would be, you know, a mistake by someone on our team. And all of a sudden, like you said, a double move and you have a wide receiver wide open or a tight end slips out and runs up the seam for a touchdown. It was everything that could go wrong for the Illinois defense seemed to go wrong, but the Illinois offense was still moving the ball and still keeping us in the game. It was a slugfest, and fortunate that with 42 seconds left, we got the ball. Did Purdue score too early? You and I were talking about it. And it played out exactly how we needed it to. A deep ball to Pat Bryant on that final drive, and then what could have been and maybe should have been a fumble. Luke Altmyer traps the ball on his leg. I mean, everyone was praying for the same thing. We knew it wasn't definitive that he was holding on to the ball. It was whether or not it was definitive that he did not hold on to the ball, and there just wasn't enough evidence to overturn it. Lucky for us
that the call on the field was not a fumble.
Oh yeah. And then Hank Beatty makes a great catch on, you know, in a clutch moment, gets to the sideline, gets out of bounds. And then I think there were 7 seconds left. We took the deep shot to Malik Elzey.
Yep.
I thought potentially, my thought live was that maybe we try to center the ball, just run it to the middle of the field. We had one timeout in pocket, but I do kind of like the take a shot to just for the dagger right there.
Yep. Throw it up to your biggest and most physical wide receiver.
Especially if you have a guy like David Alano who's got ice in his veins and you trust implicitly to make a kick from wherever it's at. And maybe, who knows, maybe that left hash is his spot. And maybe he's like, I'm fine with this. If it's an incomplete pass, so be it. This is where I like the ball anyway. But I didn't even want to watch that field goal attempt to tie it up at 43 at the end of regulation.
I can't even, like, I was just like almost manic. Like I know that I said this to you and our buddies that we were with, like a younger me, when that onside kick was recovered, the sunglasses that I had would have been smashed. Like I would have had no pair of sunglasses. They would have been either hocked into the second row in the 100 level in front of us, or just immediately smashed on the ground. Cause there's like the fact that, and to your point about the offense kind of bailing us out, like think of a Brett Bielema team, go back like in your brain, like 10 years or 15, whenever Brett Bielema was at Wisconsin, really getting things done with three halfbacks going for like 100 yards a game, thinking about like a team of his almost gacking a 24 point lead. And then also his team just going spar for spar with an offense like that. I mean, I guess it's good in the sense that he's not trying to, you know, commit to an old school style of football so hard that then you choke games like that. But I mean, that defensive effort just, I can't even like fathom. I understand to some degree that like a Ryan Walters offensive scheme is going to be so nebulous and new, and probably just like a mosh of like four or five different schemes. And all it kind of seemed like he was like pressing the play that you and I would do if like we were an offensive coordinator,
right?
Like, okay, I'm just gonna like aggregate, you know, 5 to 10 like plays that I see in a week in the NFL that I like, that are like, you know, the double pitch, flea flicker back to the quarterback, to the seam, or to the, you know, the tight end, running up the sideline. Like, that's one that we've seen a couple times. I'm surprised he didn't do the double pump screen to each side and run the tight end up the hash, but he did the tight end pop pass, the double move. It was just like, you know, we're going to run standard run option, read options with the quarterback. We're going to run a little bit of outside zone. And then when we pass it, we're going to do something crazy. And it somehow worked, just because, I don't know if like we were underprepared or he just, you know, dialed up the right, but it would have hurt so much if they had found a way to pull it. I was going to like, not even cry because of like sadness, just cry because I had too much emotion. Like I was, like I said, I was like near manic. I didn't want to do, like, I was questioning why I'm like a fan of football. Like these things should not be happening in a game against Purdue. Like, I get it, their arrival. I get it, it's the big Brett little cannon, like all that fun, or big drum little cannon. Like it was just so stressful. And the fact that when they were up 12 with a little over 2 minutes to go, and they started marching down the field, and I was like, okay. Like, I know this is going to be a touchdown. You and I both knew this was going to be a touchdown. They were just chunking us down the field. I still don't know. I mean, I guess Maccabee reached the ball over, so they got in. And then you're just like, okay, fine. The defense has absolutely blown chunks, but just recover an onside kick, and then we're getting out of here. And, of course, they just got two guys. Like, they did the perfect thing where it's in no man's land, and then no man decided that, okay, I'm going to just, like, sack up and take this ball. And, oh, man, I just – I'm going to be like, not seeing that necessarily in my nightmares, but it's just so, it's something. I can't believe that we experienced that live.
I wasn't even sure, like you, how to process a game like that. I was internalizing it on a silent drive home.
Yep.
Trying
yep,
to figure same. Out like,
yep.
what I had just witnessed, because to your point, like that choke job that happened and that feeling is so, I don't know. It's such a brutal feeling because you see it coming kind of as it starts to unravel.
Uh-huh.
And you're like, uh-oh, this is not going to happen, is it? And all of a sudden it starts happening, and then they score the touchdown on Maccabee, gets out for the pass right over the top of Ryan Mead's head for a touchdown, and Purdue takes the lead. And you're like, I can't believe this is actually what's going to happen going into, you know, this Michigan game. And after what we've done in the start that we've had to this season, to see it just slip away like that would have been brutal. And the fact that this team responded was so encouraging, yet the mix of emotions and the choke, the choke that happened before that, is you can't just throw that away and flush it. So I didn't even know. I was so happy we obviously won it, but was like, how did we even get to this moment?
Oh, let me be clear. Like, even in that near manic state, like, I'm still trying to, like, will with 40 seconds left. I'm just, like, thinking, okay, like, how do you – and you and I both saw it. Pat Bryant, single coverage. Like, yeah, maybe it was to the Purdue sideline, so they thought maybe they could get away with a little bit of mugging. If, you know, there was a 50-50 ball, they wouldn't throw the penalty flag like what happened in the first half. And, like, I can't believe that they let us do that. That was, like, crazy. Like, I get that you want to put some pressure on. But the play prior that they had, they dropped a bunch in coverage and they didn't get a whole lot, and Luke just had to throw it incomplete. Like, I mean, I'm here for it. And that's kind of obviously part of being a fan, is that I was still kind of like holding out hope that, okay, like maybe we'll get this, even in my sheer terror and panic and near depression. But the fact that, yeah, they found a way to come out of that with the win and respond in overtime, like, the fact that is great in terms of just like erasing everything. Now, granted, it's not awesome that I guess the trends continued, but that they finally bowed up and got a stop was good. But the fact that it still took, what, 2-3 plays in overtime for them to just get in the end zone, like,
yeah, two plays,
it's not, it doesn't make me feel great for a Michigan team that, like, honestly, it's not gonna be running the same offense, but in terms of like the stuff that we showed we could be beat with our defense, I'm not feeling wonderful.
No. And I guess to put a bow on that Purdue game, in overtime. Pat Bryant comes up clutch, first play, toe tapping in the back of the end zone. And so I think ball knowers and people who know Ryan Walters knew that if Purdue scores, they're absolutely going for two to try to win it then and there. So as soon as they had that first play, got down to the 4-yard line in overtime and then ran it in, I was immediately looking for them to send, keep the team out there, signal to stay out.
Yep.
And just knew it was coming. And then
my stomach was turning.
Oh yeah. A play I knew was coming that I was like, if this is how it ends, this is going to be one of the worst feelings to ever experience as an Illinois football fan. And honestly, almost one game, it's hard to extrapolate it out, but one game like that does so much damage to a fan base. If it goes against you, the scars that it leaves on the fan base and it could have done 2-3 years of damage, like negative feelings towards Illinois football. Mm-hmm. It would have just
even the season, like
lingering
you lose
forever
to a team like Purdue, who's objectively before that game, objectively like the worst FBS school to exist. You lose that. Like I'm not thinking like 5-7's on the table at that point. Like you burn all the goodwill of that early start of the season, a 5-0 start. Like, yeah, or a 4-0 start, but still that's just not going to be something that like, hopefully the players dwell on, but to your point, the fans definitely could if given the opportunity in any other games this year. Like, I don't necessarily know if it's going to be held against the team if they don't perform well against Michigan, because those are the defending champs. And I don't think it's going to be held against you if you lay an egg against Oregon. But you go out there and you do some I want to really use a bad word there, but you do some some shenanigans like that. You do that at any other point in the season, and boy, oh boy, all those sellouts, they might become a little bit more rare, because that was just I can't do that again. I can never do that again. I mean, we picked, a great game to go to because you get that roller coaster of emotions, but boy, oh boy, I don't ever want to do that again.
Bill Connolly's number one most exciting game of the week, Illinois yeah, 50.
For the
49.
Unbiased viewer, I guess. Yeah.
Oh, unbelievable. I mean, not much else we can say about a game like that, but Michigan this week, defending national champs, you said it, coming to Champaign, 100th year anniversary game, and 2:30 CBS prime time. You have an opportunity here to completely flush that Purdue game if you come out and you beat Michigan in a game. I think we're underdogs by 3 points or so. So it's not some far-fetched idea that Illinois could win this game. And I mean, I called it at the beginning of the season as my hot take that I think Illinois wins this game, just because it's partially based off me thinking that Michigan isn't as good as people thought they were. And I think that's been proven already. But Illinois is honestly playing much better than I had thought they would be at this point. So you put those two things together, and I think we really do have a good shot this weekend.
You take me back to 2-3 weeks ago, and I this is probably, you know, what the logical person does, and what I should try to do to re-reference myself. Like, 2 to 3 weeks ago, I wasn't thinking like, oh my gosh, we're going to blow up Michigan, but I was not scared of them at all. Like, they can't throw at all. They don't have any quarterback who's done any kind of damage in the passing game in terms of any kind of like prolonged efficiency in the season. They haven't even really, like, they've run the ball well, but I mean, Donovan Edwards, he was on the cover of a video game, and he was rushing for like 30 yards against Central Connecticut State of the Sisters of the Poor. Like, they don't look that great. And then last week happens, and my feelings just get completely flipped, because I'm like, okay, you know, they can't throw the ball, but neither could Purdue. And they brought in, a backup who then, you know, threw for, you know, a billion yards on us. And now all of a sudden we're going to be expecting to just bottle, you know, whoever it is. I mean, Alex Orji might have a career day. It might be Graham Mertz all over again. And then all of a sudden it's just Alex Orji is now leading Michigan back to the playoff, and they're going to think they're going to repeat based off of how they played against Illinois. Like, I'm thinking those kind of thoughts, but I probably shouldn't. I should take a step back. It's probably somewhere in the middle, maybe more towards, especially with the way Vegas has it set up. Like, it's probably more towards what the thoughts were 2 to 3 weeks ago, where it's like, yeah, there should be some underlying confidence in how this game can go, just because Michigan has not proven it. And, you know, they've been tested by, you know, good teams and not so great teams. And they're very one-dimensional. The defense is still elite, but the offense just lost so much. I mean, obviously that happens on any national championship winning team, but I think the loss of Jim Harbaugh kind of coincided perfectly in terms of like them not restocking through the portal or not doing it well enough because, you know, they were either riding the wave or they just didn't know what was going to happen with Harbaugh. And so you've got this perfect storm where, you know, they still have the pedigree and the respect and the ability to definitely go out and mollywop us. But I'm still cautiously optimistic. I don't necessarily know if I can completely rid myself of the reactionary thoughts from a week ago. But yeah, it's definitely something where I'm settling more towards like understanding, like the Penn State line didn't understand at all. And honestly, we probably still should have gotten blown up by them, but we didn't. The Purdue line, I understood, but then got like this one, I greatly understand because yeah, a couple points at home to the defending national champs. That seems about right.
It seems like Michigan's playing this shell game with their quarterbacks. It's like, who's going to be under the shell? Where's the quarterback starting from? Is it shell one, two, or three? And it's, you know, Alex Orji, it's Davis Warren, or presumably it's Jack Tuttle, the former Indiana boy. And Sherrone Morris said, Jack Tuttle's the guy, we're sticking with him. He played well enough. But after Michigan looks at the tape against Purdue and the way Max Brown ran that read option, I think you'd be crazy not to play Alex Orji quite a bit against Illinois and just put our feet to the fire and see, okay, have you guys figured it out yet? Can you stop this? Because if you can't, it might just be 300 rushing yards for the Michigan offense and running it down our throats. So I don't really know what to expect from their offense. It seems like they don't know what to expect from their offense right now, but mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised to see two different, maybe even three different quarterbacks at some point throughout the game.
Yeah, they definitely could do any number of like switching series or just riding the hot hand. And this could be something where, you know, looking at their offensive line, maybe they haven't played that great, but then they get healthy against our front seven. And it's just one of those where I really hope that we run the Nebraska scheme a little bit more, where it's make an inexperienced / bad core. I'm not calling Dylan Royal bad. I'm more so just putting him in the inexperienced box, but inexperienced / or bad, make the quarterback beat you. And I know that the pass defense had some shaky moments, but I know Aaron Henry also talked about how he was, you know, trying to do too much in the second half, trying to call some new stuff that I think they try to implement in the bye week. And I get all that, but at a certain point, like, you got to know your horses and you got to know that you're relying on a bunch of sophomores and juniors, and that's fine. And they've been in your system for a while now, but it hasn't quite clicked for all of them yet, or it's just not going to click and you can't get that complex. Like, yes, I'm sure there's some cool, fun schemes that they're trying out. There's some new wrinkles that could really add some kind of juice to the defense and take them back to that 2022 level like they were showing in the first couple games. I love that. I get that. And, you know, it's hopefully something that they can do over the next couple of years. But at a certain point, you just kind of got to stick with what's working. And also, but at the same time, they got to be able to adjust, which they eventually did, because my pick of the week, Torrey Cox, did not have himself that great of a day. But when you're matching up, you know, a guy who's 5'9", 5'10", maybe with shoes and a helmet on against their biggest physical wide receiver, I don't know if Michigan has anyone like that. I probably should have checked that. But like even something like that, where like you were just letting Torrey Cox be on an island against their number one, which is fine sometimes. But when it's like a 6'3", 6'4", physical freak, you can't be doing that. And then you need to adjust. So that's where like, and I know they eventually put Terrence Brooks on him, but at the same time, it's just like that was too little too late. So being able to see the adjustments is great. Or you should be the point of making those kind of changes. You can't just make changes and be calling different plays because, oh, well, we practice this and we're kind of like looking to see what kind of looks we can give and can get based off of this new stuff. Like the adjustments can somewhat happen in that way, but it needs to be a bit more reactionary in terms of personnel and understanding your personnel. And I know that they have a better understanding of the personnel than you or I will. I get all that. But at the same time, like after that performance, again, even though Ryan Walters, you know, gave him credit for calling that offense. Like he's a defensive coordinator. Like, there's no reason that like him doing like what I said, where he essentially like, obviously they have some install of their original offense. So he's probably taking that nomenclature and then added a couple wrinkles with the, you know, the fun plays, But like, that's something like that we would be doing. Like that's something that you kind of almost need to expect, especially against a guy who's like your rival and who is clearly no love lost. And so I know that we're kind of going back, or I'm kind of going back to the Purdue game, but as that relates to the Michigan game, understanding, like learning from that experience, understanding that you can't just be, you know, doing things without a purpose out there on defense, that needs to be paramount. And I really hope that not only the guys respond better, but that the staff responds as well to that second half, because that was just, I mean, that was embarrassing. You cannot have that happen against one of the worst teams in your level of football playing.
Right. This probably isn't that outlandish of a statement, but the way I look at Michigan is that they are pretty comparable to a Penn State team. Like their style play, they're going to lean on the defense. They have a very stout defense, and they have a couple guys who are projected top five draft picks next year on that defense. And then in the pass game, they lean heavily on their tight end. They have Colston Loveland, and Penn State had maybe the best tight end in the country, and Tyler Warren. So those two guys are two of the best tight ends in the country. And then, you know, the rest of the pass game is, I think Penn State had a better pass game, but you look at Michigan and it's a down year. They have Samaj Morgan, they have Colston Loveland at tight end, and outside of that, like, there's not much cooking in their pass game. It's been heavily leaned on the run, and they've just kind of gritted out and grinded out games. And you know, they lost two that were close, but it's not been impressive wins necessarily for Michigan. So I wouldn't anticipate a game like this being some big shootout. I think if anything, it's going to be one of those grindy games, and it stays close throughout. But that's kind of the comparison I see, is Penn State and Michigan being relatively similar. The difference, I think, is Drew Aller is a better quarterback than whoever it is that Michigan's going to throw out there. And definitely, I think Luke Altmaier has proven that he will be the best quarterback on the field in this game, regardless of who it is. So that's kind of what I think needs to happen for Illinois to have a chance, is that Luke Altmaier takes control and proves that he is a top 20 quarterback in college football. He needs to lead this team, and it's going to be tough because Michigan has the advantage in the trenches. They have the talent, they have the bigger bodies, and as we saw against Penn State, when our talent matches up with theirs in the trenches, it didn't go so well. So we're really going to have to be on our game, and our linemen are going to have to play well, and maybe it's more on the offensive coordinator to, you know your limitations and know that we don't think our offensive line is necessarily going to hold up for 3-4 seconds in pass blocking. So maybe it's a bunch of quick hitter screens, and maybe it's getting a little creative with the play calling rather than just saying, hey, Luke, drop back. But I wouldn't be surprised to see Luke use his legs quite a bit, because we saw him later in that game against Purdue get loose. And once he started doing that, they didn't really have an answer for it. So I think, you know, hopefully Lunny kind of latches onto that and says, you know what, this might be the solution here. Get Luke going on the ground and maybe run some read options of our own.
I do like that in terms of the attacking a little bit more horizontally than vertically, because you need more time to attack vertically. My one concern is that Michigan's also going to think about that and understand that even if they just press man, then it's going to be, and especially with Wink Martindale, like, he has some very aggressive and very blitz heavy defensive schemes. So I'm a little bit worried that, and that was where Luke's done a lot of his damage, is when he's the couple plays where he's gotten, you know, the ability to get into a second or third read, and he's looking over the middle of the field and finding that in breaking route or that development in the scheme of the play to find that guy. That's where he's really thrived and where he's shown his greatest improvement, I would say. But he's also obviously made the throws when it comes to, you know, the little bit of motion, the play action and hitting someone in the flat. Like, those are all great. And I love that Lonnie's kind of getting that action rocking. But at the same time, I worry that they're going to be kind of like thinking that way in terms of like, hey, they're going to be trying to attack us in the flats and with little short, quick hitters. So we're going to just play press man, jam them, blitz them, dare them to beat us with trying to, you know, pass protect without their best pass protecting running back, and with an offensive line that hasn't shown that it's going to be able to keep, you know, Luke upright that consistently. Because that's, even against Purdue, that was still an issue where, yeah, some plays he was getting all day long and he was making great reads and great throws, but, you know, when he's not, that you just can't have that, because the play needs to be able to develop. So I don't know, it's very concerning. But to your point, we should have the best quarterback on the field on Saturday. And it's rare that you would say that against the defending national champs. And the fact that, you know, you have the best player at the most important position might be able to neutralize those differences that we've been talking about, because there are enough that, yeah, I understand why they're favored, even though they're struggling this year. But, I mean, who, like, the USC win is good, I guess, but USC's lost to Minnesota and Penn State, and obviously Penn State's good, but, like, I don't really know if that's that great. Texas, you know, clobbered them at home. I don't know if they have it, and I think that they still have a lot of their charisma from winning the national championship, which of course they should, and that's going to help them play, you know, with a little swagger and confidence that you need in football. But, like, I also wonder if that could be their undoing, because they might not actually be as good as they think they are.
They're coming off this bye too, after a Washington loss. So it's like the extra week of prep. Does that give them what they need to get over the edge and get back on track against an Illinois team that's, you know, looked bad last week? I'm not sure, but I do want to talk a little bit about, we talked X's and O's, but the pomp and circumstance of this game too, right? And 100 years of history. I think what will be hopefully the rowdiest and the livest game day environment Champaign has seen in, you know, 20 plus years. I think they said it's been 20 plus years since we've had a ranked versus ranked opponent in Champaign, which is a crazy stat. I mean, this is one of those games where you can just pull every crazy stat for Illinois and be like, last time Illinois was 5-1 and last time a defending national champion played. There's so many little stats you can pull about this game, but personal service announcement to the people, especially on the east side, northeast balcony, after the games. If there's a win, I urge everyone to go to the northeast tower and wait for the team to come through, because there's a little tradition cooking up. And, you know, I think the team loves it. Rep Bielema loves it when the entire stairwell is lined with Illini fans and he gets in there and walks through, fires the people up with a couple ILL chants. And it's a very cool scene. We tweeted it out after the game. Coach B gave us a retweet, and I know he's been enjoying that little tradition. And I think it's a very cool thing. So if you have, especially if you have kids with you too, it's pretty fun. Get them in the stairwell and watch the team come through. And if Illinois loses, I don't know, just walk away. But
Yeah, it was one of those where if I didn't relate so much to the feeling of, did we just win that with a feeling of complete loss, I would have been a little bit more brazen in trying to direct people, because we were kind of, so we were what, in the southeast section of the stadium, up on the second, the balcony section. Like, we were obviously in enemy territory a little bit, but there was enough that if I was feeling a little bit more brash, I would have been, you know, telling people like to follow us and like don't head that way. I legitimately was thinking that as we were like pushing through against the grain of traffic. I'm sure people were like, what are these kids doing? And I was just like, you guys are missing out on something great, because it's awesome. It's like it's the reason that college football is so great still, because you get emotional swings like that. You get moments like that. And it's these kids are making money, but they're also still kids who are like playing a game and they're more prone to mistakes. And I'm not saying that they love it any more or less than pro players, but like pro players, like they're doing this as like, you know, their full-time job. They understand, like they've got their career. This is their career. They got families. They're a bit more measured. It's like, you get these moments where you can, you know, enjoy that pure happiness and bliss of a win, which hasn't come around Champaign too often. You better get your butts over that. Cause like, it's like, you don't get to do if you don't get to do it that often, enjoy it when you can. B, if you get like an absolutely sweet win or like a comeback win, whatever it is, then go enjoy it as well. Like I love it. I want more people to love it. I want more people to get fired up. Like, that's the one thing that I feel like, you know, maybe we've lost a little bit. And to your point, like, we need to get a little bit rowdier, because we've got a good football team, and you know, you can make a market impact if you're getting loud, if you're affecting another team. I know Coach B talked about it in terms of like, oh, we'll pump in stadium noise for like a team like Nebraska. He wants that to be something where opponents have to prep for us with pumping in stadium noise in their practices. Like, these are things that we can set the standard for, and getting a win against the defending national champs who are ranked, coming into town, 100-year commemoration, like, these are you shouldn't need a, I mean, honestly, you shouldn't really need a reason, but this is everything to get off your feet, get loud, and get the boys pumped and ready to go.
On that note, want to get into picks of the week?
Sure. I'll let you go first this time.
All right. I'm going to steal someone that I'm guessing you're thinking about, but I talked about it a little bit earlier. Luke Altmaier is my pick of the week, kind of a chalky pick, but if Luke plays, you know, how he's played this year, I think there's a good chance Illinois wins this game. But it's going to be tough. This is, again, we said it, a Michigan defense that's very good and has some legit first round talent on that side of the ball. So I think Luke needs to have a good day running the ball. I'm going to say he needs 70 yards running. And I'll say 70 rush yards. And how about a rush touchdown to go along with it? That's my specific stat of the week. But Luke Altmaier, again, chalky, but I think we need him and we're going to lean on him heavily in order to win this game.
I love it. And yes, very chalky, but I mean, after that performance, I'm like trying to rack my brain of,
don't get too cute.
Yeah, exactly. I wouldn't even, like, I can't even dream of who I pick on the defense because, like, I don't know. It's one of those where it's just been a disappointment for most of the season for some of the units, but then for the entire defensive unit.
Maybe someone like Matt Bailey has an opportunity to be good here because against Penn State, he shut Tyler Warren down for the most part. I think Tyler Warren had three catch. He only had one catch when Matt Bailey was one-on-one against him. But so maybe Colston Loveland gets shut down by Matt Bailey, but he hasn't necessarily been consistent this year. So that's that's the fire you're playing with.
Yeah, I think I'll just continue riding the hot hand. And after the breakout that Josh McCray had last week, he's going to be my pick of the week. Once again, pretty chalky. Without the Caden Fagan, you know, big boy back, that's going to be something where, I mean, maybe Jordan Anderson gets some play if they need it, but I really think they're just going to lean on him. I think we saw something, as much as I know you and I love Khalil Valentine and most people are clamoring for him to get more touches after, you know, the success he's had rushing the ball, that sack strip fumble was not entirely on him because it was just bad protection all around. But that's one of the things with playing a true freshman. Sometimes you get that kind of not even lapse in judgment, but just that lack of reps and banked times going up against and pass pro against Division I, you know, prospects who are, you know, able to rush the passer with ease, even if they're, you know, 275, 300 pounds.
Yeah, people forget that just because a running back is out there does not mean he's touching the ball every play. And there's other assignments and other responsibilities of running backs on, you know, in pass protection or on check down plays or, you know, getting out in front of a quarterback who's running. So just because he looks good with the ball in his hand and has shown some flashes that, you know, are very encouraging, by the way, there's also other responsibilities and skill sets you have to have in certain scenarios. And I think his inexperience, to your point on that one specific play, showed a little bit. And maybe that's the flash people need to see to realize, okay, maybe an Aiden Loffrey in there, maybe a Josh McCray who has the experience and can stick their nose in there, and pass protection is what we need.
And that's something I've actually really liked from Loffrey. I just don't know. He might be best served as a safety. I know there was talk of that, like, where do you play him in college? And you just take athletes like him and you figure out where they go. But his willingness to stick his nose in it and as a pass protector is something that I greatly enjoy when watching the games back, because that is something that he is a pretty willing pass protection blocker. And I don't know if you're going to see as much Khalil Valentine, because they might learn from that and then just have it be more of a two-man rotation. Because before it's kind of like, okay, we're going to feed everyone and get, you know, Fagan to Valentine to Loffrey to McCray to even, you know, Jordan Anderson playing fullback. Like, all right, let's get everyone. Now it might be more of like, okay, we're you know, halfway through the season. Let's just, you know, buckle up and play our big dogs. And it, as much as I know that Aiden Loffrey hasn't, you know, been the most productive, it might be for situations like that where he's a change of pace back and you lean on Josh McCray, who showed a little bit of that burst. He showed a little bit of that true freshman season last week. And, you know, some of that might be able to be chalked up to Purdue and maybe Michigan's, you know, first round NFL talent and defense everywhere just swarms him. But I'm encouraged. you know, Coach B was getting emotional talking about him. So I'm going to ride him as my pick of the week.
I love it. All right. Lean right into your prediction as well.
Oh, man. You know what? I'm going to do it because I know you're doing it. So might as well just, we're going to be there. I can't possibly, like, for homecoming, the 100-year commemoration and everything that the Patriots, like, we're going to be tailgating all day. It's actually sneaky. I get to brag on that. Well, not brag on this, but I get to say this because I'm already 30 and I already had all the pageantry and all that good jazz. But it's Dan's birthday coming up. So say happy birthday to Dan when you see him this weekend. But we're kind of doing this like a, you know, we're turning 30. We're getting all the folks together. It's going to be a big thing. There's no way in heck I can predict a loss this Saturday. It just would go against everything that's in me. Even if I have a sneaking suspicion that things could go really wrong after, you know, the display against Purdue, I can't possibly do it. So I'm going to go Illinois 23, Michigan 21. I just think it's going to be one of those where some clutch David Alano field goals again. He kind of has a season like Griffin had last year where it was just kind of like sneaky. Oh yeah, like, those were like game-winning field goals, just casually, or clutch field goals, casually. Maybe another 50-yarder into the wind that could have gone 60. Maybe something near the end of the game where we're down 21-20 and he comes through in the clutch. But that is going to be my prediction. The good guys win. We all go crazy. We're stomping on the bleachers. We're having a great time. let's get wild, champagne.
I'm gonna lean in with you. And the way I look at this the way I look at this game is like you're approaching a stoplight. It's been green for a while. In that Purdue game in the second half, it turned yellow. And you're just a little bit outside the intersection, but you're like, nah, I think I got this. So you're just gonna send it through. That's where I'm at right now.
This is the perfect analogy.
We're throwing caution to the wind.
Wow.
And
that's so
although this light could be turning red on us, I think we're risking it for the biscuit. We said at the beginning of the year, my hot take was Illinois is going to beat Michigan this year. And don't forget Nike's new Red Grange uniforms being unveiled for this game, the leather helmets. It was always the leather helmets. It was always Red Grange, 4 touchdowns in 12 minutes, 6 touchdowns in the game, 100 years of history, 60,000 people in the stadium getting loud against the defending national champions. I think Illinois pulls this one out 2017 in a touching tribute to Red Grange. I will say that the freaky fast delivery guy pulls out an upset as well against some, I don't know, maybe he'll race the entire stadium. Who knows?
That would be awesome.
Give us Illinois.
That's what we should do.
Give us 2017.
Everyone gets to race Red Grange.
Free Red Grange races in the parking lot afterwards.
Oh my God.
It should be a beautiful day too. I think it's supposed to be 74 degrees, sunny, perfect fall day. And the only way to make it better would be an Illinois victory. Get to 6-1 and get those playoff conversations started again.
I needed to be 2:30 on Saturday already, Dan. That was beautiful. Wow. The analogy, the pageantry, the visualization, the imagery. Oh man, I want it so badly and I need it. I just flushed last week, fire up, focus in. And let's take them down.
And you said fire up. The only thing we will not be firing up will be the cannon after touchdowns. Because if that cannon goes off.
I can't believe that happened. What was that? Like, there's a 2-point play happening. You can't have that happen. It's got to be like one guy's job. I don't care if that person, you need to hire someone who doesn't know anything about football. And I know that might be contrary to what you need to do because you need to be situationally aware of football. But it just needs to be someone there who is solely looking at the cannon. And they get a signal from someone up in the press box or whatever who knows that there's a play running or not. And they get a button that says fire or don't fire. And it should be on don't fire for like 99.9% of the game. And the only time that you fired is when it says freaking fire. Like that was, I was like in shock. I mean, you and I are having a debate about whether we should go for 2 from the 18 or we should kick the field goal. And then all of a sudden, like, okay, the play's going. And then the freaking cannon goes off. Like, what are we, like, what's going on?
In the cannon game, nonetheless. Yeah, if we would have lost that game, that would have been my storyline of the game. It all turned in the 2-point conversion cannon went off as Luke was dumping it down to Aiden Loffrey on a 2-point conversion from the 18-yard line. But that's the only firing we won't need this week. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, maybe a 1 week suspension is in order for that cannon master.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to still keep the cannon rocking. Cause I do kind of love that tradition. I know people probably don't, like, I got used to it and I kind of love it. There's something so football about that. So American, just like, we're at a football game watching a bunch of dudes like run into each other and try to tackle each other. And one of our celebration points is just firing a freaking gun. Like, what's going on here? Like, it's just so beautiful and so perfect. So college football. I love it. I like that it's a tradition. I know that it's a new thing. So maybe people aren't like the biggest fans because everyone hates things that are new, but I love it. And yeah, just figure it out because I don't want it taken away from us. I don't want any stupid stuff like that happening again. So then we can't enjoy the cannon anymore.
If Illinois wins, I need Brett Bielema firing off cannon shells like crazy.
We need to get like AI to Photoshop Brett Bielema just riding that cannon as it fires with like a Red Grange image, like running into the end zone. I don't know.
Also, to follow up on last week, I looked and looked and looked for a picture of Brett Bielema holding the cannon, could not find one. So if anyone finds it, let us know. We can do our, for every 100 likes, we'll make Brett bigger and the cannon smaller. But I was looking everywhere and every player on the team seemed to be holding the cannon, but I couldn't find one with Coach B holding it. So maybe a full-size cannon would be a good post-game. A shirtless cannon picture at the end of the game with Brett Bielema would be my dream with roses in his mouth.
I love it. I need it. We got to have it. We just, oh man. You know, he said that it was your best lessons can be learned in a close win or whatever. He was like, I don't know if I necessarily agree with
that. Spin zone of the year.
Yeah, I was going to say, there's an old chess adage that you learn the most from your losses. And I think that that's true. And maybe this is the most loss feeling win, so you can learn something from it. I don't really know if you, like, you know, learn anything because you kind of escaped with your ways intact. So but yes, to your point, that is the spin zone of the year.
I doubt if you presented Brett Bielema with two options and said, you beat Purdue, you know, 45-3, or you beat Purdue, what was it, 50-49?
Yep.
Then which one, and you know you're winning in both games, which one do you choose? I doubt he chooses the one where he ekes out the win. I'm pretty confident he would say, I'd rather just blow them out. So,
yep.
That's
but he has to say that. I get it. He's got his spin zones, but it's still just hilarious to think him, actually, this is the best thing. Like, okay, the coach speak is alive and well.
2:30 p.m. CBS national TV. Hopefully you're not watching on TV because you're at the game, but if you are, enjoy it. I think Gary Danielson and CBS, Brad Nessler, baby, on the call. Beautiful day in Champaign. Only way to make it better is to do Red Grange proud and come out with an Illinois victory.
I love it. And yeah, but I guess do enjoy it if you're at home. The finals, and I know this is kind of like a little bit of a, after the crescendo of us getting hyped up, but it's sweet that we're on CBS. It's sweet that we're getting the music and that we're getting the A broadcast. The one thing, like, please let me know your thoughts on this, because watching back, I some of it was just like the highlights. So I understand that like announcers are going to get into it, but whoever the play-by-play guy was, he was just like Gus Johnson light. Like, he's just like screaming at everything and, oh, Brown! Oh, he's got him! And it's just like, okay, dude, like, I get it. It's a sweet play. And I loved it for the last sack, but it's kind of like the whole thing where if you do it all the time, it loses its luster in the moment. And it was awesome consuming it on the way home where I was like, oh, this is a great call of Rosiak's sack because he just got so into the play. And I thought this was kind of like a one-off thing. But yeah, luckily you don't have to deal with that. And, you know, I'm sure some people like it. I know people like Gus Johnson. I'm sure people like that passion rather than some kind of laissez-faire attitude. But yes, if you're staying, if you're not able to make it, if you're at home and you're enjoying the game, enjoy that we've got the CBS team, the 2:30 CBS team, two ranked teams in Champaign, 100-year commemoration. Let's get it.
Thank you, as always, for listening to the Field Pass. We appreciate it. Go Illini.